Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. And we welcome in this segment medical journalist Olivia Campbell. She joins us this morning to discuss her new book, Women in White Coats, the little-known true story of three pioneering Victorian women who fought to become the first women doctors, revolutionizing healthcare forever. Olivia Campbell is a journalist and author specializing in medicine and women. Her work has appeared in The Guardian, The Washington Post, and New York Magazine, among others. Her debut nonfiction book is Women in White Coats. It is now out, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the Roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, Olivia. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
A great pleasure. Again, the name of the book, Women in White Coats, How the First Women Doctors Changed the World of Medicine. So how did you come to this particular subject of wanting to explore these women?
Well, I first got the idea after reading about two riots. So these happened about exactly a year apart. There was a riot in Philadelphia, and then about a year later, there was a riot in Edinburgh, in Scotland. And both of these riots were cases of male medical students in the Victorian era. They were throwing violent temper tantrums, just throwing fits because women were daring to appear in the classroom and try to join them in getting a medical education. So I said, you know, these are almost identical. There's something going on here. I need to dig further and see, you know, what exactly these women were facing when they were trying to enter the field of medicine in the Victorian era.
Do we know what was the motivation on their part of what they wanted to do and what they wanted to accomplish with that?
Almost all of the women's stories that I uncovered were... These women were driven by the desire to pursue medicine because they saw a female family member or a relative suffering a terrible illness or dying a really slow, agonizing death, being sick much more often than their male relatives, all because they didn't want to consult a male doctor, and that was all that was available, or they didn't feel comfortable telling a male doctor about the full extent of their problems. They didn't really want to discuss the more delicate issues they were experiencing. So they weren't really getting the care they needed. They were, you know, admitting that the care was almost more painful than the disease itself in many cases. So it was a desire to really overturn these ideas about women's health care, about, you know, how women should be cared for.
So it was the original idea for them, for women to care for women then?
Right, yes. Almost all these women opened up medical practices solely to treat other women, and then they would, you know, kept getting bigger and bigger. Almost all of their private practices would then turn into a hospital at some point in the story. But yes, it was almost all for women and children. And it was one of these doctors, Elizabeth Garrett, her daughter also became a surgeon. And it was her hospital, Louisa's Hospital, that then pioneered women treating men. They had a hospital in wartime, and they opened up another hospital. And it was that the next generation that it was really normalized for women to also be treating men.
I want to get into these three women talk about these three women in just a moment. But before we do that, let us talk about, just for a second, about the work that was being done at the time by male doctors. What you point out in the book is that, as you just stated, women were dying in large numbers. What they were dying of was seen as treatable. And what you say in the book is that what was being done by the male doctors was not only really demeaning to the women, but also, in many cases, extremely painful.
So it was just in the era right before this when pretty much any gynecological complaint you would come to your doctor with, they thought it was because you were having too much sex or not enough sex. So basically women didn't want to talk to their doctors about this because they were going to be accused of one or the other.
Yeah.
So things like ovarian cancers, you know, any other gynecological complaints that could progress into something much more serious if not caught early, they didn't want to talk about it. So, yes, if they caught many of these things much earlier, their prognosis would have been much better, and their treatment would have panned out better for them.
Olivia Campbell is our guest this morning. The name of the new book is Women in White Coats, How the First Women Doctors Changed the World of Medicine. You look at the, you mentioned one, but Elizabeth Blackwell, Elizabeth Garrett Anderson, and Sophia Jex Blake. Tell us about these three women, how you chose them, and why their specific stories were so important.
Yes, my original pitch for this book was included a lot more doctors. I would have loved to have covered many more people, but I found this really interesting story, the narrative of Elizabeth Blackwell, Elizabeth Garrett, and Sophia Jex Blake coming together, having a sort of contentious friendship, really unlikely friends. They're very different personalities, but they have this common interest of having women, you know, be able to be educated as a doctor and not experience the harassment and sexism in medical school or as a practicing doctor. So they come together after having these really disparate experiences of getting their MDs of their own, and they found the Women's Medical School for Women in London together. So you have Elizabeth Blackwell is the first licensed MD in the U.S. Elizabeth Garrett is the first licensed practicing MD in England, and Sophia Jex Blake is the first licensing practicing physician in Scotland. So they're all first, and they all, Elizabeth Blackwell was in America, of course, and the other two are mostly in England. But they're all coming from very different experiences. They have very different ages, different personalities, and they kind of tolerate each other because they need to found this school so that women can have a place to be safe and to learn.
How aware, if at all, were they of each other?
The more I researched, the more points of intersect, points of overlap I found between them. So Elizabeth Blackwell is kind of the original. She's giving a tour in England to talk about how great it is for women to have careers and why not choose medicine in the UK. And so young Elizabeth Garrett goes to this tour to see Elizabeth speak and is inspired. She gets to go like after and meet Elizabeth. So she basically inspires her to become a doctor. And then one of Elizabeth's proteges, Marie, who moves from working with Elizabeth in New York, then to go to Boston to set up a medical school and a hospital for women. That organization in Boston is where Sophia is, the people there spark her interest when she visits there. So Sophia wants to open a school, not necessarily a medical school, but her dream was to open a school. So she travels to America to do a tour of the co-ed schools here, like Oberlin College, the schools where men and women study together without any problems. And she doesn't stop off in Boston and meets these medical women and gets inspired to become a doctor herself. And then Sophia actually attends Elizabeth Blackwell's medical college that she established in New York for a brief period. So there's lots of different overlap pieces, but they all end up in London and they work together to build a school for women.
You mentioned there were many people that you wanted to include in the book. So at what point does this start to really become a movement?
I think definitely these three women are considered basically the reason why there are women doctors today. I think it's really hard for us to envision a world where there are no women doctors whatsoever, but this is what they were dealing with at the time. And I think it was because they didn't just get their medical degree and stop and practice and be done. They made a point to establish schools so other women could join them. They made a point to establish hospitals where other women could train, because you couldn't find training at any other hospitals either. So they really opened up the doors to have women in the field.
When you look at the work that was done, even in teaching other women, at what point, I'm interested in the struggle for these women to actually practice, of what they had to do to then do what they were trained and excelled at.
Yeah, so Elizabeth Blackwell, when she first set up her practice, it wasn't good. She was having to ration coal and food. She wasn't making money. She's not, you know, from a wealthy family. So she was struggling a lot. You know, she talks about the early years is a very dark time in her life. So that's when she decides to start doing lectures. She starts giving lectures to the local community about women's health and just basic like anatomy topics and household health kinds of things. So that helps spark an interest in her as a physician. Elizabeth Garrett does a little bit better because she is from a wealthy family, so she's got the financial support of her family behind her. You know, they're sending her food every few weeks and that kind of thing, so she's not struggling as much. And they really welcomed her a little bit more there. She was a very prim and proper lady, so, you know, she was kind of welcome in the community. Sophia just, like, just had a terrible time. She's had this really huge personality. She could be really grumpy, angry. She's a loud mouth. She says what's on her mind, doesn't really care, which is why I love her. but she, you know, she's went to Edinburgh University, and she and these six other women, the Edinburgh Seven, they're called, you know, they go through the entire schooling process, and then the school says, no, we're not going to give you your degree. You know, they earned it, but they didn't actually earn it. So then she has to still go on and after and keep trying to get certified after doing all the work to earn it. She doesn't actually earn it. So then it was her idea to establish the school in London. And then they basically kick her out while she's out on a trip. She's out off in Ireland taking the exam to finally get her MD license, basically. And she gets kicked out because they say she's too feisty, she's too much, she's not a good look for the school, she's not a good ambassador. They need someone who's more demure, like Elizabeth Garrett. So the school is known as Elizabeth Garrett's school, and it's not really, it's Sophia's school. So Sophia moves to Scotland and starts her little practice, and she has a pretty good practice there. But I always feel bad for Sophia because she didn't deserve it.
Olivia Campbell is our guest on the program this morning. The name of the new book is Women in White Coats, and the book is published by Park Row Books. Let me ask you about researching, given the difficulties that these women had in beginning their careers and what they were going through and the challenges, how difficult was it for you to find out information on them, to research them, to know what exactly happened and what they went through?
Well, luckily, a lot of them left essays, books, autobiographies. Elizabeth Blackwell has been written about a lot, of course, so she was pretty easy to research, and she wrote a lot of stuff of her own as well. But I also traveled to New York to some archives at Columbia to just, you know, dig through letters that she had written herself. There's a lot of letters. There's a lot of archival stuff, and it was really, really exciting, really electrifying to me to hold these letters that she had written. You know, it's her handwriting. That's incredible. And then I got to go to London and to Edinburgh, Scotland, to dig around in the archives there. Now, there wasn't a whole lot for Sophia. There is a lot of essays that she penned, and her partner wrote a biography of her right after she died. But Sophia had requested that all her papers be burned after she died. So her partner wrote this biography that included a lot of her diary entries and her letters and things. So that was lucky for us. That's basically all we have that's secondhand about Sophia is those notes. She also wrote many essays, and she wrote about her experiences in medical school. So there's a fair amount to work with. It was really a question of really what I wanted to include, what was pushing the narrative forward.
What was it like for you to read that work, especially in the context of what you were doing, of putting these stories together, to read those words from these women and realize what it meant to them at the time and what it still means to us today?
It was equal parts infuriating and inspiring to research and write this book. Like, these women are so, oh my gosh, the power is incredible. I'm inspired. I'm moved by them. And that, you know, at any point, they could have easily given up and no one would have thought less of them. You know what I mean? Like, the things that they were subject to, the harassment in school, the harassment, you know, after when they're trying to practice, no one would have minded if they said, okay, I give up, I'm done. or they just, you know, sat around and said, okay, I'm not going to do any more than just practice as a doctor. That's it. But they kept going and they said, I'm going to make it so no one else has to experience what I experienced. And that was just truly inspiring to me.
When you think of the impact they have had on doctors of today, both men and women, what do you come up with? What do you think the long-lasting legacy is?
Well, one of the main things is that they kind of proved, first of all, they proved to the world that women could be doctors, could be surgeons, could be any kind of doctor. So it was kind of overturning the idea that women didn't have big enough brains to be a doctor. They didn't have, you know, the fortitude. They could, but they couldn't stomach it. You know, they definitely could. And that they had brains for science. And they used that to kind of start overturning these dubious claims of male doctors about how women's bodies worked. So one of the big things at the time was that a lot of doctors were saying that excessive mental or physical exertion during your period would make you sterile, like you couldn't have babies. And so this was, you know, that's women's one purpose is to have babies, right? So they're trying to scare women away from going to school by saying, oh no, you're going to make yourself sterile. You won't have kids later when you want them. So then these doctors, these women doctors can say, start doing studies to disprove these claims and say, look, I actually use science to say, no, that's not true. They helped popularize preventative medicine. It was kind of a radical thing at the time. Elizabeth Blackwell was really into that. They had home health care workers in some of the first hospitals and social workers, antiseptic practices. They were a big help in spreading those. And ironically, a lot of early medical women had to go to mainland Europe to train, right? That's the only place they could find training. They had to go to France, to Germany, Switzerland, to take schooling or advanced schooling. They would get an MD at a little local college and then they'd go there, or they would go there to get their MD. But because of that, these are the places where medical innovation is happening. Like, this is the cutting edge of medicine in mainland Europe at this time, right? So then they bring those ideas, those treatments, those instruments back to the U.S. and the U.K. So because of the sexism pushing them over there, they actually made cutting edge treatments come to America much sooner.
Well, the book is fascinating and just filled with great stories and amazing history. How the First Women Doctors Changed the World of Medicine is the subtitle. The name of the book, Women in White Coats. It is published by Park Row Books. Olivia Campbell, I thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on our program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.